here. I've not been associated with the ASA for probably the last 12 years, but it's been a very important organization for me. I can remember being here when I was 19 years old. It was my first ASA meeting. And at that time, I was able to visit with many faculty, both at the University of Maryland and elsewhere. I came back regularly throughout my graduate career, and much of what happened since then has been due to my association with this group. So it's a pleasure to be back, and I intend to remain associated with ASA this time around. What I want to talk to you about today is the disconnect between what is needed for farmers, particularly in Africa — that will be the case study that I'm going to use — and what is actually available to them. There's a tremendous disconnect that, as the president and CEO of IFDC, I see every day the problems that are associated between what farmers need and what they're able to get. And so I want to first focus on the science of what is needed, and much of this is very familiar to you. In fact, many people in here are better experts at this than I am. And then I'd like to focus on why it's so difficult to solve some of these problems, and again, using Africa as the model. But before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about IFDC. Some of the older people in here know IFDC well, but some of the younger people don't. It stands for the International Fertilizer Development Center, and it is a nonprofit international public organization that works extensively throughout the world, but particularly in Africa, to help provide solutions to smallholder farmers in Africa, Asia, and occasionally in Latin America. Now, this is a picture of many of our staff at IFDC. That was a joke. I'm not hearing any laughing. But actually, I'm using this to make a point. A lot of people don't know what IFDC is, but many of you know the city of Muscle Shoals because of its music heritage. The Lynyrd Skynyrd song, if you remember this, and Muscle Shoals has got the Swampers. Some of you are shaking your heads in here that you do remember that. The Rolling Stones have recorded multiple albums in Muscle Shoals. I saw Paul Simon there just a couple months ago, so it's a fabulous recording studio history. Many of the classic American soul singers began or had much of their career go through a variety of these recording studios. And this is actually the album cover for one of Cher's albums back in the, I think that was probably the late 70s. So we're well known for the music industry, but hardly anyone knows what Muscle Shoals really should be known for. And that is the home of the U.S. fertilizer industry. Fertilizers are responsible, as this audience knows quite well, for about half of all the food produced on this planet. So without fertilizers, crop productivity would significantly diminish. And of the fertilizers that are sold in the world today, the process for 75% of them were developed in Muscle Shoals. At one time in Muscle Shoals, there were 1,200 PhD scientists working on fertilizers through the National Fertilizer Development Center. As the TVA shut down in that region, much of the industry has since moved away, and now IFDC is the last vestige of this great history. But that is where the fertilizer industry in the U.S. and to some extent the world started. So it's a fabulous case study of agriculture and how Muscle Shoals, a very, very tiny town in a relatively poor area of the state of Alabama, has had so much influence on the rest of the world. It did begin with the National Fertilizer Development Center, which was part of the Tennessee Valley Authority. They did, as I said, they had a lot of the early fertilizers were developed at this site. I wanted to include another historical photograph here. That's the Tennessee River there in the background. You can see the dam that is over the river. That's the Wilson Dam, a hydroelectric dam. So the first nitrate plants, or first ammonia plants in the U.S., were here because of abundant hydroelectric power, waterways for distribution of those materials, and it was an area that frankly needed a lot of economic development from the federal government in the 1910 and 1920s anyway. So it was a very good place to build this. These buildings in the foreground here, those were the nitrate plants where the air was reduced into ammonia and then further converted into nitrate. This plant was actually started to produce ammonium nitrate for explosives prior to World War I, knowing that we were going into the war, but the plant opened after the war ended, and so they took down the name TNT off the plant and they put ammonium nitrate fertilizers. And that's how the industry started in the U.S. Today, this is what IFTC looks like. It's a modern building. We're almost like a little mini land-grant university. We do a lot of research with field greenhouse laboratories, with pilot plant for fertilizers, do a lot of education, a lot of outreach as well. And so in some ways, we model what many of the land-grant scientists in this room are doing. But this is what I was asked to speak about, and it's the disconnect between what farmers need and what farmers can get. And again, I want to use Africa as a case model. 85% of all of the work today of IFTC is done in Africa. The rest is done in Southeast Asia, Bangladesh, Myanmar, and Nepal primarily. But Africa is where, I think, as we all understand, our future issues will be seen. The changes that we're going to need in agriculture will have to be African appropriate, and all of you in one way or another will be contributing to the solutions of the problems, that some of which I'm going to talk about now. I'm also going to focus primarily on fertilizers because that's what I know best, but it's also a perfect case study of what farmers need and what they can't get and why they can't get it. So here's the situation in Africa. The bottom line is that food production has not kept up with the growth in population. In Africa, we're going to be at about 2 billion people by the year 2050. And the question is, can we keep up as agriculturalists and farmers with the ability to produce food for the continent? It's a divided question right now. Some people say we can, some people say we can't. I think when you look back in the history of agricultural scientists, the demographers have always said that we collectively will not be able to keep up with the growth of population. The Malthusian diarist of many years ago. We have kept up through science and technology and through the work that many of you have contributed to. We've been able to feed, not necessarily that everyone has nutritious food or enough food, but we've been able to at least produce enough food to theoretically feed the population today. The question is, will we be able to do that in the year 2050 in Africa? And here's a summary of kind of the problem that we are looking at. The top one there, that's the U.S. growth in productivity, crop productivity. Obviously, it's going up through the advent of high technology and agriculture. The bottom one there, the purple one, that's sub-Saharan Africa. We don't have as much data as we do for the U.S., but look at the differences between the increase in productivity. That's the problem that we are facing. The population is going up almost exponentially. We need crop production and yields to grow up exponentially, and that's with less water and less soil availability in Africa. As the population expands, the slide before that, it said that the per capita land availability for food production has been going down. So we need to produce more food on less land, and most likely with less water as well. There are lots of reasons for this, and I'm going to focus on fertilizers, but that's not the only issue. It could be water and the ability to irrigate those areas that are not adequately rain-fed. It could be technology, it could be education, it could be research capacity, but it's certainly seeds and quality genetics. On one side here, you see the difference in yields of various crops compared to what the yield potential is. And this would be for crops that are adequately fertilized, growing in other parts of the world. And you can see that the average yield gap difference there for Africa and for the rest of the world is about 400%. So that's a problem, but that's also the opportunity that we're looking at. If we can achieve adequate or average yields in Africa, we can then solve or prevent many of the problems that we are facing and looking at today. Now, I don't want to also suggest that it's a dire situation in every country. Some countries are doing quite well. If you look at the ones, let's see, that would be your left, they're not doing well. A lot of these countries are in West Africa. They lack water. They lack access to both seeds and fertilizers and other inputs. But again, on the other side there, some countries are doing quite well. So Africa is such a big continent, you can't talk about it in a single context. It's just like the United States, and we have different regions, different peoples, different cultures, different opportunities. Africa is that magnified tenfold because of the size of the continent. When you look at the causes of low cereal productivity, the low use of improved fertilizers is also an issue. On one side there are some countries that are doing quite nicely. Maybe not quite enough fertilizer, but they're pretty close to what they should be using. There are other countries that use no fertilizer or very, very little. And without fertilizers, as I said, that's responsible for 50% of the yield of crops. Those countries simply are not able to get to the next step to produce enough food until the situation changes. But the situation to change is not that easy, as I will explain in just a minute. Per hectare fertilizer use by market as well, these are looking at different regions. On the top there, Sub-Saharan Africa, that's the 8 kilograms per hectare number that I pulled over from the previous slide. Compare that to some of the other countries. In the U.S., we generally utilize, and in Europe, generally relatively appropriate amounts of fertilizer. It's not appropriate for all regions, but generally speaking, we do okay. But look at some of those Southeast Asian regions. They over-apply fertilizer with the subsequent problems that we all are familiar with, and some of our award winners today actually study very carefully: groundwater pollution, surface water pollution, evolution of nitrogen gases into the atmosphere impacting climate change. So everyone's got their own problem, but at least in Sub-Saharan Africa, they simply need to use more fertilizer on the continent. The suggestions have always been, well, let's just use only organic fertilizers. Let's don't make the mistakes that we've made in Europe, where we've over-fertilized soils, or maybe in the upper Midwest of the U.S., where we're now causing impacts of hypoxia in the Gulf of Mexico. Let's avoid those mistakes. So there is the opportunity to prevent what has happened in many areas of the world, but we simply need to use more fertilizer. Organic fertilizers are not going to make it. There simply are not enough animals on this planet to produce manures. We often need to continuously crop these soils, so getting the green manure on, while it's a great idea and a wonderful concept, and I think everyone here would support that, sometimes in the rotation within the African context, it's quite difficult. And that's really the theme of what I want to talk about, is that what seems like a very obvious solution at times becomes difficult in the context of other cultures. So this is an old picture that we use, but I was in Myanmar and Kenya just last week, and I hear this all the time. The farmers go into the farm store. There's plenty of Coca-Cola to buy, but they come in to buy fertilizer. So you can buy Coke anytime you want. You cannot buy the fertilizers, which are much more needed and much more valuable to these communities. And it's kind of a sad commentary to me that we are very good at producing, distributing, marketing Coca-Cola to the rest of the world. We can't seem to get the fertilizers that will prevent hunger and malnutrition for young people and children into these same areas. So this kind of summarized the problem that we have in a lot of areas. There are commodity fertilizers in Africa and Asia as well. Commodity fertilizers are N, P, and K, or various combinations of that. They're often quite simple. They're simply produced, they're simply distributed. But as you're going to see in a minute, they are not meeting the needs of many of these old, weathered soils that have been cropped for many, many years in Africa. So N, P, and K, is not enough for many of the soils in Africa today. And we see non-responsive soils all over the continent now, where you add adequate N, P, and K to the soil, nothing happens. Crop growth does not increase. So it's something else that is lacking. And everyone in here knows as well as I do that the what is lacking is often either the secondary micronutrients, particularly sulfur on the continent of Africa, but then some of the other elements that you see lower on the table there. So a couple decades ago, we knew about nitrogen, we learned about phosphorus, we learned about potassium, but over time, we have been adding more and more and more microelements or secondary elements to this list of what's needed, particularly for these soils that have been cropped for decades and then sometimes centuries. Here's some more information that you all know well, but this to me really drives home the point that we are extracting micronutrients out of soil every year that we harvest our crops. And in most regions, including the United States now, in some areas, we are not replacing those nutrients, and that's why you have been reading, and I think all of us have been, probably a lot of us have been paying attention to the fact that in the popular press, there's this notion that the micronutrients or the nutrient content of the foods that we eat have been going down over the last couple decades. And someone came out with a report just a couple weeks ago saying that this was due to climate change and enhanced carbon or CO2 or photosynthesis increasing carbohydrate yields, which was essentially diluting out the micronutrients that were in that food. That's probably part of it, but I think most of this would be due to the fact that we've not been replacing these elements in soil. So if you looked at the soil content of zinc in many areas of the U.S. or in Africa, it's been going down as well. And that's a huge problem, particularly in Africa, where we now know that the lack of micronutrients is responsible for a whole variety of human health concerns. So people who are deficient in some of these microelements, zinc in particular, you're more susceptible to HIV/AIDS, and you're more susceptible to malaria. There's a whole host of diseases that have been identified as more serious because of the lack of proper human nutrition in certain areas of the world. So we need to make sure that we're replacing these elements in soil. Just to give you a couple examples of where this is, let me get my glasses on here for a second. This is in Uganda and Burundi for zinc and copper. You can see for yourself that there are plenty of deficient areas on these maps. And these are the areas where we need to be replacing copper and zinc into these soils, and we are most likely not in probably 99.99% of these areas, occasionally in some very high value horticultural crops or in plant or large plantations where it's managed by an international company such as some of the big chocolate production. We might see some application of micronutrients, but that's not generally the case, or probably never the case for smallholder farmers. Sulfur and boron, here again you can see that these elements are particularly lacking in a couple of countries. They also need to be replaced. This is some data from IFDC where we have looked at stacking various nutrients on top of one another, but the main point of this is that when you now stack micronutrient additions onto some of these soils as a fertilizer, you can get significant increases in crop yield. A farmer, particularly a smallholder farmer, I have learned by spending a lot of time in Africa now, frankly does not care about the human nutritional capacity of the food that they are producing. These are smallholder farmers that are paid by the yields and paid for the crops that they can sell. They don't get an additional increment to the food that they have just because it has high zinc in it. If the zinc improves crop yield, that's great. They will be able to understand that. They're not particularly cognizant of the fact that maybe that food is more healthy. So we've always got to be able to show farmers that the addition of these micronutrients to soil will be improving the yields, which is what they will respond to. In wheat and rice, we can see the same type of thing. The top portion of each one of those bars is the addition in crop yield coming from micronutrients. You can see here again, it's relatively significant. There's no farmer in the world who would not be happy with the added crop yield that comes from the addition of micronutrients. And micronutrients are so very, very cheap. I was with someone from the International Zinc Group just a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about zinc and the problems that it is causing with human health around the world. Because it is needed in trace quantities in crops, it would be a couple hundred kilograms needed to eliminate zinc deficiency globally, worldwide. That's just a couple hundred dollars, maybe $1,000 at most, that we could use that to eliminate a very, very significant problem globally. Now, the problem is getting that trace amount of zinc into the plant. Ultimately, it's not nearly that simple. But a couple hundred kilograms could be used to solve so many problems that we have with micronutrient deficiencies. A couple pictures of this. This is corn in Mozambique. You can see the difference in crop yield. That's what farmers respond to. Farmers don't like seeing what happens when only N, P, and K is added to the soil. And these farmers might think that N, P, and K then is not a useful fertilizer. These are not particularly sophisticated farmers, but they know what they can see, just like any other farmer around the world, and that tells them that they just wasted a whole lot of money adding fertilizer to the soil when really it was the sulfur and the zinc and the boron that were needed to allow the N, P, and K potential then to be realized. Some maize in Zambia as well. Better response with less fertilizer when you use micronutrients. So here we were saving farmers money by applying less N, P, and K. But with the micronutrients, which were very, very cheap, although not available, you can see the difference. Here's one more wheat in Ethiopia. So this is a widespread issue for the continent of Africa. The needs are quite obvious. So the challenge is to bring better fertilizers to smallholder farmers, most of which cannot afford to buy the fertilizers in the first place. These fertilizers are purchased in very small volumes, so it's hard to find a fertilizer company or blender or distributor that's willing to come and invest the capital into making more balanced fertilizers that are needed to improve crop growth. And as I said, they cannot access custom blends for their crops and soils. So the challenge, just to reiterate, bring better fertilizers to smallholder farmers, most of whom cannot afford soils to analyze their soil. That's the first step. Soils analysis on the continent of Africa, it's not that it's non-existent, but there is certainly not a lot of it. Fertilizers are purchased in small volumes. Only about 3% of the world's fertilizers are sold in Africa. There's not a lot of incentive for many of these big multinational companies to invest on the continent. That's not to say they aren't. Some of them are starting now to do that, and kudos to them for recognizing the potential. 3% of the world's fertilizer is using only 8 kilograms per year. For a big fertilizer company that wants to make money, to them, this represents a great opportunity globally. We're probably not going to be selling a lot more fertilizers, at least some of the standard commodity fertilizers in Europe or the U.S. in the future. But we are going to sell a whole lot more fertilizer in Africa going off in the next couple of decades. So these companies are starting to realize that while not a lot is used today, there will be more used tomorrow. The strategy is quite simple. It's to go through the process that most other developed countries have gone through. Map nutrient deficiencies on a micro scale. A lot of groups need to be involved in this, just like it was done in the US or Europe or in China. Validate and refine fertilizer blends based upon mapping. So you need good information, you need good research institutes, you need land grant universities that are conducting research to match the plant crop needs for those regions with the fertilizer inputs. And then you need someone to produce and blend the fertilizers that target the specific crop and soil requirements. So the way forward is actually quite easy. The social, economic, and cultural divide, though, makes this a lot easier said than done. So some of the constraints to introduction of new fertilizer products in sub-Saharan Africa. Again, I could substitute new irrigation technologies here. I could substitute crop new seed genetics, improved seed genetics here. The story would be the same. But first of all, to begin with, the lack of or outdated soil maps. This is a significant need for the continent of Africa. Yet there's a great opportunity here as well. In the U.S., Europe, we went through and we took just about every acre of cropland in this country. We collected a sample, sent it to a laboratory for wet analysis, chemical wet analysis, and developed soil test recommendation. A continent the size of Africa, there is no way that we can do that. So we need new technologies and we need new groups who are involved in mapping the soils of these regions that heretofore have not been mapped. There's no single solution for this. There are still groups working on developing wet chemistry laboratories on the continent. Certainly they're going to be the benchmarks for everything that else can be done, but there are many spectroscopic technologies that are being developed today. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is heavily involved on the continent to promote new technologies to get over this hurdle of we simply can't test every acre of land on the continent. And so with new geospatial technologies to knit together the data that is being collected from regardless of the source or regardless of the technology that's been collected, knitting that together in a way that may provide some good soils maps for the continent. It's not going to be the same as if we had tested every acre of soil, but it might be good enough to come up with some broad recommendations. So maybe in the southern part of the country, we would use one type of fertilizer with micronutrients. Northern part, you may need a different. Maybe with a certain crop, you would need a third type of fertilizer. But ultimately, there may be three or four or five different types of fertilizer available for a single country. We're probably not going to get to customized fertilizers just like we would in this country or Europe for very specific soils and crops, but maybe we don't need that. These slides will be available, by the way, and there's a lot of, on each one of these slides, I talk about the way forward, which is some of IFDC's and some of our partnering organizations like IPNI and even some of the universities about how we collectively think some of these problems might be solved. There's certainly a restrictive business and regulatory environment or framework in many of these African countries that have made it difficult for the implementation of a lot of new technologies. Just a couple examples. There are a few countries where you need, in my opinion, excessive crop testing of new agricultural products before they will be approved by the government authority. They require a lot more testing than we would see in most other countries on this globe. This is a continent that needs technologies faster, not slower, yet the government regulatory framework is slowing down the process. It's often difficult to move crops, to move soils, to move materials from one country to another because of import and export restrictions. A lot of these countries have the same issues. They have the same needs. Why can't we use the same information across border lines? To give you a good example, there are some good wet chemistry laboratories for soils analysis or for tissue analysis on the continent, but getting soil from one country to the next is often impossible. It's very difficult to get soils from another country into the U.S. Just magnify that over 50-fold on the continent where there are so many countries that are dealing with these issues. So the business environment does make it much, much more difficult. And there are a number of other issues that go along with it. Now, there are some countries on the continent of Africa that have understood this to be a problem and have reduced and brought down many of these barriers. And when that happens, these countries are taking off right now. Some of the countries growing fastest in agricultural productivity, partly because they are starting from such a low base, but they're on the continent, and they're doing fabulously well. Those are the countries that have reduce these regulatory hurdles, have brought in some of the multinational companies, have been great at courting outside donors like USAID and some of the European governments, and they have understood that bringing together the entire circle of groups needed to promote these technologies. So again, it's governments, it's farmers, it's private business, it's their NGOs and IPOs, but they brought them all together and they're doing really well right now. So it's not an insurmountable hurdle. One of the other biggest problems that we see is some of these multinational companies are not willing to invest in Africa because, again, only 3% of the fertilizers globally are sold in Africa, and they simply can't make enough money. So they sell commodity fertilizers, and they are reluctant to get involved where the profit potential may not be adequate at this point. So some of the forward-looking ones are there, and they are working hard, banking or betting on the future, but many of them are not. These, unfortunately, this is one of the hardest nuts to crack at this point. How can we incentivize these private companies, which is where ultimately the solution will be found, but how can we incentivize these private companies to do more work on the continent of Africa, and how can we incentivize them to sell more complicated fertilizers other than just N, P, and K? And even when you are able to sell something that's more complicated or blended, or it may just be a commodity NPK fertilizer, sometimes it's not even that easy to get to the farmer. Is there a port to get these materials into the country? Are there roads to get it to the farmer? Is there someone who can mix these fertilizers together? Are there dealerships and are there small storefronts that are able to sell that fertilizer to the farmer? And are there extension agents who can help explain the purpose and the use of these materials to the farmers that up until this point have probably never used fertilizer? So extension or information delivery is another very serious issue and something that we in this room are collectively engaged in. But I've talked to many farmers on the continent who literally have told me that fertilizers are poisonous to their crops. Sometimes they have good experience where they have misused the fertilizer, probably put too much of it on, or maybe got the fertilizer on the leaves when it was too wet outside and they burned the crops down. So it's been misused, and the reputation for fertilizer in some of these areas is not very good. So we need a mechanism to educate the farmers, the smallholder farmers, about the benefits of fertilizers. Some countries have very good extension systems, but others don't. And I've met with most of the extension programs on the country. I can tell you that there are some that do very, very little good. They rarely get out of the office. They have no connection with smallholder farmers. There's some cultural divides between those that work in the government, typically a ministry, and getting that information out to the farmers. You don't do that type of thing. That's exactly the opposite of the way extension was meant to work. And as you all know as well, extension has a two-way street. You deliver information to the farmers who need that information, but those extension agents need to be on the farm. They need to be looking at the crops, talking to the farmers, what do they need, why have things not gone well in the past, and then take those questions back to the researchers of the ministry or of the university, and from that solve the problems that are needed. And then lastly, just one other concern, and that's there's nothing unique about this with farmers around the world, but farmers are all risk-averse. Companies are risk-averse. What can go wrong when you're working with fertilizers? I've talked a lot about what can go wrong. You can overapply it, you can misapply it, you can not get it, you can get it at the wrong time, and apply those fertilizers. Getting fertilizers at the right time is another issue that can be a significant limitation on the continent of Africa. So farmers, whether they're in the United States or Africa, they live the life of climatic uncertainty, of drought and flooding, and commodity prices shift around regularly. So they understand the risks as well as you know, any regulatory or NGO individual that is supposed to know these things, they probably know it better because it's their daily, it's what they think about every day. And so they do tend to change very slowly. The common theme for farmers is you do have to show me how these new technologies will work. We can send all the extension bulletins to small villages we want, but until you can get the farmers onto one of their neighbors, into one of their neighbors' fields, show them the demonstration trials of how these blended or new fertilizers, or maybe even N, P, and K for the first time, how they make an impact on crop yield, they're probably not going to make the changes that are needed. And that philosophy goes all the way up the value chain, at least in the fertilizer industry. Everyone wants to reduce risk. And that's where a lot of groups like the National Fertilizer Development Center, IPNI, there's some fertilizer financing groups in Africa. That's where these groups can come in and de-risk some of these new technologies. We can help offset the cost for farmers. We can educate them in ways that they will see it for themselves. We can help them understand that there are ways to double or triple, and sometimes even more so, improve crop yields. So the bottom line here is that farmers will always be risk averse, and until we use our knowledge, our technologies, and working with many other people in the ministries and show farmers directly the benefits of the technologies that we have all worked on for many years, a lot of these things are not going to be developed. So just to conclude, this is our grand challenge and simply a reiteration of what I've been talking about. We all know that the solutions are out there. These are not complicated solutions that we're talking about. We know that zinc is needed to improve crop yield in many places in Africa. We know that improved concentrations of zinc in grains and other in fruits and vegetables will improve human health. That's easy. However, the social, economic, regulatory constraints of many of these regions make something that is so obvious to many of us in this room really quite difficult. And as I have moved from the land-grant university to an NGO that works primarily in Africa, one of the main things I've learned is that you have to understand the context of these other countries. What may seem so easy sitting in a comfortable room in Tampa, Florida, and what may seem so obvious within the context of many of these other countries, it may be impossible or it may be very, very difficult. And so that's why you need boots on the ground. You need to talk to the farmers who are living this life to understand why they do what they do. Every farmer on this planet makes good decisions for them that year. There's no farmer who wakes up in the morning and says, yeah, I think I'll make some bad decisions today because I'm producing too much food on my farm. So they all want to make good decisions. The decisions that they make on that day are the best decision for them, given all these other constraints that they have. So we can't really understand much of that, but they do. So our conversation is always has to be two ways. We have good technologies and we can solve some of these problems, but we don't understand the context of the lives of smallholder farmers. And so that's where groups like IFDC can come in that do have boots on the ground, or your projects funded by USAID in some of these countries to understand what farmers are living through every day. So ultimately the question is, will we be able to feed 2 billion people on the continent of Africa by the year 2050? I'm confident, given our history collectively and globally, that we have been able to keep up, but it's a real challenge. Again, given that we'll have no more soils, cropland, we'll probably have less water in the future, are we going to be able to do this? And the only way it can happen is with enhanced technology. So you're the right people at the right time. The right place is Africa for the future, and I'm here to urge all of you to think more about, as you think about these issues, what will be the implication in the context of these smallholder farmers in Africa. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Scott, for that enlightening and presentation. He's certainly challenged us, and I would like to present you with this certificate in appreciation for a very excellent talk and a challenge for the future that we all have to respond to. So, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our awards breakfast and York lecture. I hope to see you all and more next year in Baltimore, and I hope to see as many of you as can in San Diego in 2019. I've made a personal commitment to attend both meetings, and hope that our societies will all be working together in the future. So thank you all for attending, and enjoy the rest of our annual meeting. Thank you.